Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So in this session, we've been talking about wholeheartedness, among other things. Michael talked about that on Thursday, and Joanne elaborated a little bit yesterday. I think Joanne said, one step, one thought, and a whole life appears. One choice creates whole universes. So I've been thinking about that. And actually, it reminded me of a scientific theory that I recently heard about. Some of you might know about this already, but it's string theory. And so there's a lot of interesting things about string theory, but one thing is that there's an idea of a multiverse in which our universe is not the only one. There are many universes that exist parallel to each other, so they're kind of all going on parallel. And there's different theories about that, which I won't go into all the different theories, but one of the theories is that there are copies of you sitting right here, right now, listening to this talk in other universes. And other copies of you that are doing other things in other universes. So actually, these ideas are kind of new to science, but they're really not so new to religion. So in the ancient Hindu cosmology and in many Buddhist teachings and in many of Dogen's teachings, we find this sort of really vast view. So just as a reminder, an overview of Dogen's view of the universe or multiverse. I just want to read something I found on a very wonderful blog called The Existential Buddhist. So, and let's see, who is the person? I should say who the person is. Seth Zwiho Siegel is his name. So anyway, I think he's from Maizumi Roshi lineage. Anyway, so here's his little overview of Dogen. Dogen's universe is one in which space and time is fully integrated and where every point in space and every time is immediately and intimately connected with every other. Yeah. Dogen's universe is one in which space and time is fully integrated and where every point in space and every time is immediately and intimately connected with each other. It's a chiliocosm. So that's a word sometimes if you've studied the Lotus Sutra or other places that you hear. So chiliocosm is a multiverse of infinite Buddhas and infinite worlds, even within a single atom or a blade of grass. It's a universe, so this is Dogen's universe on this blog. It's a universe that makes no distinction between animate and inanimate, where mountains walk and walls, fences, tiles, and pebbles endlessly teach the Dharma. It's a universe where all things are in a constant process of change and derive their being from their interrelationship with everything else. It's a universe where all things conspire to encourage us to wake up and recognize our true nature. Our non-dual, compassionate relationship with all of reality. So that seems pretty consistent with string theory and multiple universes to me. So another interesting thing about string theory, I'm not going to talk about string theory the whole time, or at least not only string theory. But another interesting thing, so this is according to MIT cosmologist Max Tegmark. There is a level of parallel universes where each possibility that can exist does exist. Yes, there's a level of parallel universes where each possibility that can exist does exist. So in other words, everything that could possibly happen does happen somewhere in some universe. So you might wonder what this has to do with Katagiri Roshi, because that's the overall theme of our Sesshin. Well, so one thing is that there is a universe in which he did go to Brazil and taught there. And there's a universe in which he stayed in Japan. And in those universes, something else happened in the Twin Cities. We don't know what. From our vantage point, we can't see or know that. And there's a universe in which Shoto stayed in Cleveland, and in which Dosho Port stayed at Clouds and Water, and one in which I became a lawyer instead of a Zen teacher. I'm not sure how to take that. I guess I'll just take it. I would be a good lawyer, compassionate lawyer. But there's probably a universe in which I would have been a very unkind lawyer, too. So anyway, for me, ever since I heard about this theory of multiple parallel universes, I've been really intrigued about what it means for our practice, what it means for practice. So you might think, what is even the point of practice if this is true? If everything that can possibly happen does happen in one universe or another, then how can it matter what I do in this moment, right? So you might think, oh, if there's a parallel universe where there's me doing some other thing, like doing the good, kind thing, then what does it matter if in this universe I'm being selfish, right? We might think that. Somehow, though, it does matter. I don't know how exactly, but somehow it does matter. There may be parallel universes, but this is the universe that you find yourself in. This is the universe in which you are aware. So it really is of the utmost importance that you make your best effort in each moment forever, as we heard yesterday, Suzuki Roshi quoted, making your best, Zen is making your best effort in each moment forever. So that's my belief, based on my own experience and the experience of teachers I respect from the ancient past and the vivid present. And actually, for me, the question of what does it matter, if there are these parallel universes, what does it matter what I do, that question doesn't come up for me so much. What comes up instead when I consider the theory of multiple parallel universes with multiple me's doing other things, is how freeing this is. So what I consider is, if I mess up in this universe, there's a me in another universe that did better. And there's also a me in the other universe, another universe that did worse. Once in a while, maybe I'm in the universe that does the best possible thing or the worst possible thing, but that's very rare. That's very rare. So almost, you know, 99.99999% of the time, there's some other universe in which I did better and some other universe in which I did worse. So knowing that, it's freeing for me because I feel like I can just make my best effort without expectation. I can just make my best effort without rigidity and worry. And actually, by making our best effort without expectation, we change the structure of time and space. So that's actually the title of chapter 22 in Each Moment is the Universe. It's called Changing the Structure of Time and Space. And in this category, Roshi talks more about that in terms of time, but it really applies to space as well. So I'd like to share a few things from that chapter. Dogen Zenji mentions that one moment, a finger snap, one moment consists of 65 instants or moments. We don't know exactly what the 65 moments are, but something is really there, enough to make our life flexible. Within a moment, something happens. Miracle. That miracle comes from time and space. The unknown 65 moments within a moment and the unknown spatial dimension, I would add here, this could be the 65 to the 65th power parallel universes, all the different spatial dimensions. That's how the miracle happens. You don't know time and space exactly, but you can manifest this miracle within the moment or within the space that you do know. Within the moment you know and the space you occupy, you can manifest this miracle. So then he says, for instance, if you become a basketball player. So in some universe, we all are basketball players. Isn't that great? If you become a basketball player, you need the power of your individual effort and your group's effort, and you have to master technique. But that is not enough to guarantee that you will win. When you play on a certain day, at a certain time and place, you don't know whether you will win or lose. Even though you have practiced very hard, the moment when you start to play, everything becomes zero. So basketball players don't know what will happen, but they hope. What do they hope for? He says, I think they hope for a change in the structure of time and space. And then he says, you can change the structure of time and space. How? You have to manifest time and space that you don't know within time and space that you do know. Usually, we trust the moment we see through our six senses, and we don't trust the unknown 65 moments within one moment. But are you sure of your existence stably and steadfastly? I don't think so. That's category. I don't think so. So I think we're like the little monkey flying to what we think is the end of the universe. But in fact, we are in the palm of Amitabha Buddha's hand. And the four poles that we thought marked the end of the universe are just the fingers of the hand of the Buddha of infinite light and infinite life. That's one metaphor. If that doesn't work for you, it's okay. We don't know where we are really. That's the point. We don't know where we are really. Katagiri Roshi says, to be sure of your existence with confidence, you have to see yourself doing something in the universe with all myriad beings, not in your individual territory. The little monkey couldn't see clearly because he was trying to do things under his own power, in his own individual territory. Katagiri says that to be free of our individual territory, we have to jump into the expanse of the conscious world with full devotion. If you do that, your physical territory disappears. You have to jump into the expanse of the conscious world with full devotion. And if you do that, your physical territory, your individual physical territory disappears. It's not destroyed, but we're not bound by it. Katagiri says, if you continue to act with full devotion, your consciousness becomes one with your activity. Your consciousness becomes one with your activity, and the form of your consciousness disappears. When your body and mind are dissipated in full activity, you completely forget yourself. So he uses the example of basketball players, you know, anyone in sports that's completely engaged, but it could apply to musicians, other artists, accountants, cooks. It doesn't, you know, there's not a particular thing. I think sometimes it's maybe easier to see in the athletic realm. It's a little bit easier to see because they're moving their bodies in space and time. So if they really do completely enter into that timelessness and spacelessness, then we notice something really beautiful. We might not see it as clearly when it's the accountant who's really just there with the activity. But it can happen there too. Because anything that can possibly happen does happen. So, but how do we do this? How do we jump into the unknown 65 moments within one moment? It's impossible. But Katagiri says what we can do is jump into the moment we know. How can you manifest the 65 moments that you don't know within the one moment that you do know? I could also ask, how do you manifest all the parallel universes that you're not aware of within this one universe that you are aware of? Well, one way you can manifest it is the question that Joanne brought up yesterday, asking, what is happening now? That was Trungpa. What is happening now? What is happening now? You don't have to wait till you're dying to ask that question. Well, we're dying anyway, so. But you don't have to wait until you're at death's door to ask the question. And for me, asking that question within this backdrop of multiple infinite possibilities, infinite universes, and 65 moments within a finger snap, or infinite moments, asking that question, what is happening now? Katagiri says, the structure of a particular time and space is very helpful to you because you can create elasticity there. In this particular time and space, you have a choice. You have an opportunity to fully devote yourself to doing something that is on a page that didn't print. Okay. Doing something. That's really great. Well, it might be in the book, but I also wrote other things, so let's see. No, it's here. It's here somewhere. Because I also copied, I saved the old copies, so. Yeah, I think I will. Yeah, why don't you go look just in case it's still on the printer. So that's actually the end of my talk, so it's almost at the end. But in the meantime, let's see if it is here. All right. So I'll just start over from how do we jump into the unknown 65 moments within one moment? It's impossible. But what we can do is jump into the one moment we know. And then how can you manifest the 65 moments you don't know, or the universes that you can't see, in the moment that you know and the universe you can see? This is the question. The structure of a particular time and space is very helpful to you because you can create elasticity there. It's a flexible situation, an opportunity given to you where you can fully devote yourself to something and forget yourself. This is how to bloom your flower. That's the line that I wanted to make sure. At that time, you can change the whole situation. You don't know why or how. It's mysterious, miraculous. So we have some time for questions and comments either from today or from previous days. So I invite you. Kyoku?
When we're mindless, do we change the structure of time and space?
That's a good question. Well, probably the structure of time and space is just changing. So, but just like it's not, you know, we could say, what does it matter whether I make my best effort in this moment because there's these multiple universes going on. So even though the structure of time and space might change whether we do something or not, something else happens when we bring our best effort forward. So there's a different, you know, there's a different pivot point, or there's a pivot point and it goes in a little different direction when we make our best effort. And maybe the structure of time and space is always changing, but we're not entering into that change in the same way if we're mindless. That's what I think.
Or sparkling versus a diamond that's still 10 feet beneath you.
Yeah.
Unmanifested.
Yeah, I think that's a great metaphor. Yeah, thank you.
Earth-shattering, universe-shattering talk you've given, and I thank you, gratitude, for where I'm meeting with it right this moment, and the opening up of my fixed views, it's fresh air. Thank you, and it seems too that there's a holding a dynamism between this and that, that same issue of not yes, of being directly present in this moment, show up, what I'm saying now, and that, what do you say, stepping back of, wow, this, and there's some other Lillian elsewhere doing that. Like, it doesn't, I don't feel it matters so much if I'm mindless. So what? Becoming mindful. Bingo. Show up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like not so much about I did this, I didn't do that. Just, I don't know. Be there. Be here. Right now.
Yeah, well, it's like at the moment you notice I've been mindless, then you're mindful, right then. So then just go with that.
Yes, thank you.
That what you said also reminded me of kind of another way I've been working with this is seeing each moment as a pivot point. So usually we just think of the significant things. Like for me, I was doing an overseas trip to Ireland, and I was on my way back home, and I decided I was planning to go back and finish school pre-law and go into law school, but I wasn't sure that I really wanted to do that. I went up on the deck. I happened to go up on the deck, and there was a classmate of mine there, also an economics major, and I said, what are you doing after graduation? He said, I'm going in the Peace Corps. I said, what? An economics major? And he said, oh, yeah, there's all kinds. So anyway, that was a really major pivot point because it took my life in a different direction, which I think helped me to see that being a lawyer wasn't really going to bring me, at least in this universe, very much joy and doing something else. So usually we think of those big moments as pivot points. But I'm looking at, as I'm cleaning my Oreoke bowl and moving the setsu stick this way rather than that way is a pivot point. It could go in many different ways, and there's many different universes where something else happens, where I spill the water, where I go right instead of left, where, you know, and then to see that as of utmost importance, that I make my best effort in that small thing, not just, you know, on the bow of a ship deciding, you know, the big career thing, but in every moment. So, yeah. Thank you. Yes.
I love, too, how this interacts or overlays, meshes in with Indra's net. Just because I have that visual in my mind a lot of Indra's net and this interconnection and with this string theory, whatever, and with what Dobin was saying, how it just, it's beautiful.
So for those who don't know, Indra's net is sort of, it's good though. It's the vision of the universe as kind of a net. And then at each sort of node of the net where the strings connect, there's a jewel, and in each jewel, every other jewel in the net is reflected. So it's like everything is interconnected like that. So it's great. Thank you. Kelly.
Who's doing the notice?
Good question. I don't know. But something is going on. Some sort of brain waves are going on. So, yeah, but to hold that, even that, to hold that lightly. Because if we hold on to that tightly, then we're stuck in our individual territory again. Yeah.
I think it's holding something in your hands, and your hands are open and not clutching. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to grab onto it.
Also, for me, the string theory idea of the multiple me's in the other universes, then it's like, well, who is this here in this universe? So that helps me with that, not to hold it so tightly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Perhaps also it might be helpful, I heard at once that we're all interconnected with gossamer thread.
Mm. Yes, that's nice too. Yeah.
To be gentle.
Yes, very nice. You all?
I was just having a Hojo-san moment. And he said, time and space are the same. And I remember thinking, wow, this is how it works. I just remember thinking, wow, how does he know that? I know that from dancing, you know, right? I know that. But I was like, how does he know that? That's amazing. I was very impressed.
I never studied string theory. It came out after I finished college. And I never knew why I should, but now I do. I've had the concept of parallel universes for a very long time from reading science fiction. And I will get to the point. So a few years ago, I went to a workshop in something called Matrix Energetics, which sort of was and was not about healing. But one of the techniques was that you would go back in time and change something and switch into a different universe. And that was the method to change something in your life. Now, the rule was you had no idea what was going to happen, and you could not try to make it go a certain way.
Ah.
You just had to let go and trust the thing. And this is like, oh, and they claimed that physicists supported this.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't read all those books because there are many things I was too busy for. Like I was too busy to read Katagiri Roshi's book. And it's occurred to me there's a universe in which I am not too busy and have not been too busy. And I like that thought very much. This opens up what you said. It opens up complete freedom and a million possibilities.
Maybe one more. Genjo. So the hole is bigger than the inside is bigger than the outside. Is that what you're saying?
And that is like how big it could possibly have been. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. much too big for them. Mm-hmm. And so what she has proven that it is somehow is a place where another universe crashed into ours mm-hmm. and made that effect. So mm-hmm. the universes do interact.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't quite understand.
Yeah, right, right.
And the other thing that I was thinking is, in the case of the 100-foot pole, Chosa says that the way that we manifest all of these universes as our true body is just by taking one more step.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another saying of Katagiri's, just take one step. So maybe that's a good thing to close on. Thank you.
I vow to end them.